Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Why get all your holiday decorations delivered through Instacart? Because maybe you only bought 2 wreaths, but you have 12 windows. Or maybe your toddler got very eager with the advent calendar. Or maybe the inflatable snowman didn't make it through the snowstorm. Or maybe the twinkle lights aren't twinkling. Whatever the reason, this season, Instacart's here for hosts and their whole holiday haul. Get decorations from the Home Depot, CVS, and more through Instacart and enjoy free delivery on your first 3 orders. Service fees and terms apply.
Guests appear on the Smile Center Hotline. Now, back to the Gabe Kuhn Show, presented by Oxbow. Oxbow, with special guest David Cobb from CBS Sports, live on 92.9 FM ESPN.
David Cobb is college basketball and college football writer for CBS Sports. He is on X at David W. Cobb. He joins me now via the phone line. David, what's happening, brother?
Not much, Gabe. What's happening?
Oh, nothing much. How was your extended weekend? How was Memorial Day?
Yeah, it was okay. The weather, man, like, what in the world? Tennessee is just like a magnet for crazy storms, it feels like. But in between the storms, got a little time on the lake, got a nice round of golf in. So all things considered, it was pretty good.
How'd you play? Were you okay?
Yeah, actually, I had a great round. So we went up to East Tennessee to see the wife's family. Pretty tough course out there for any of the golfers ever making the trek that way. Go check out Aguani Farms. It's a public course, pretty nice. Shot an 81, which is a good score.
Oh, there we go.
It's a good score for me. Had a couple birdies, so that, you know, that checks all the boxes that I need to feel good about myself.
I only played 9, and I played like garbage, but we don't have to talk about that. What we can talk about, though, is the Tigers. Tiger basketball getting a little bit of a gut punch today. No David Jones returning to school. He's headed to the NBA draft. What do you make of that decision? What do you make of this team going into next year?
Yeah, I guess a little bit of a surprise, considering that David Jones has not really generated any buzz as a first-round pick. And the deal with this draft and this class being so weak is that you're not going to see a ton of second-round guys end up on guaranteed deals. And so with David Jones, we're talking about a likely either second-rounder or undrafted free agent. And so you have to think, right, Gabe, that there is a guarantee of a two-way contract that he's sort of pre-negotiated perhaps with a franchise, or maybe there's a couple of franchises that are interested in signing him to a two-way. Because you got to think, with what Memphis has available in NIL and in terms of role, that coming back to school was a really attractive option. So, I mean, you got to think there was a two-way deal hanging out there for him to where he can play some in the NBA next year, probably end up playing some in the G League, though, and that's not a particularly glamorous life. When you've got a spot available at a place like Memphis. So a little surprised by that.
But one thing I will say, and how much do you buy into this, it feels like this was sort of strike while the iron's hottest for him, right, for the NBA and his potential, you know, stock.
Yeah, I think there's some merit to that, because if he comes back next season, numbers-wise, it's going to be hard to match what he did a year ago when he ended up being the alpha, the number one option. Because Penny's done a good job in the portal of adding firepower to this Memphis basketball roster. So in the grand scheme of things, yeah, Memphis is a loser today. Like, I'm doing a winners and losers of draft deadline.
Yep.
And I needed some losers, to be honest. So in that sense, for the sake of content, Memphis will fit that bill nicely. However, I don't think it's the end of the world, because you've got P.J. Haggerty, you've got Tyrese Hunter coming in. Those guys can go and get you buckets. I think I've been banging this drum all along that Dane Danger is a player who can score a lot of points for you and be efficient offensively for you. And this frees up the offense to play through some of these guys that Penny's gone out to get in the portal. And I'm not saying there's a ton of talent left in the portal, but there's enough out there to where Memphis could maybe redirect some of the funds they were going to use to pay David Jones to go out there and take a big swing at a Jameer Watkins, who's transferring from Florida State, or a Garway Duall, who's a promising kid who played a really solid freshman season at Providence. Like, 95% of the players in the portal have committed already, but there's still that 5% out there, you know, 15 or 20 players who you'd be happy to have in your rotation at Memphis.
Yeah, but it just definitely limits the reason it's a gut punch, it limits their ceiling by a fair amount. I still think they have a team that's relatively complete as far as pieces are concerned, but you're just limiting your scoring production because now you're going to have to ask yourself who's going to be the other alpha outside of P.J. Haggerty. Is it going to be Tyrese Hunter? Is it going to be, like you said, Dane Danger, Colby Rogers? You just have to ask yourself that question. And we've seen when you don't have that solid pecking order at Memphis, sometimes it can bite you a little bit.
Yeah, but this might actually sort some of that out, because if you get David Jones back, you know, the expectation there is, of course, probably 15 shots a game or something in that neighborhood. That's a lot. That's a lot of offense running through one guy when P.J. Haggerty spent all of last season with the ball in his hands at Tulsa. So in that sense, I think this clarifies it to a certain extent. Now, you do need to go add a guy or two. I mean, I don't know that you want to go into the season with 9 players on scholarship. I know John Calipari apparently thinks you can do that, but I wouldn't advise that. Bill Self wouldn't advise that after what he went through at Kansas last year with a lack of scholarship players. But if you get to 10, which you would have been at 10 if David Jones had returned, but you can go out and get somebody in the portal. You can get to 10. Maybe you can find somebody else, get to 11. I think they're going to be fine from a depth perspective so long as they get to 10 or 11. And, you kind of hope now that some of these auxiliary pieces sort of hit. Barack Okoji, you know, you kind of need him to hit. You need Colby Rogers to hit. And there's no reason to think they won't, but their roles and their, you know, spots on this roster just become all the more important without the, you know, likely presumptive AAC player of the year
right
on your team.
Yep. Now, you did sort of write an article a few days back, I think 5 days back, about the college football season being 3 months away, week zero being 3 months away, but we're still talking about House versus NCAA and the settlement. Are we gonna? How fast do you think we can move past that and start talking about some actual, you know, on field matchups and everything else? Are we already there?
Oh, man, I'm moving past it. I'm ready. Hey, I went to Walmart yesterday for the explicit purpose of snagging that Lindy's College
Football
magazine, but for no other reason, just to smell it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
but it wasn't there yet, so I might have to make the trek to Barnes & Noble. I don't know what I'm going to do, but that's out there, right? Phil Steele isn't far behind it, so, man, I'm excited for that. I'm actually going through today, working on ACC odds, sort of some of the best bets in the ACC. That's going to drop tomorrow. And, you know, so to me, I'm flipping that page. Like, the NBA draft is sort of the last big basketball thing on my calendar before it flips to, like, 90% football for a few months, you know?
Yes.
And so we just have a few more weeks left of that with obviously, the draft. And, you know, I've got a mock draft coming out tomorrow. But we aren't far, Gabe. It won't be long before we're talking X's and O's in college football.
Now, you say you're doing an ACC best bets, everything else. What do you think about Clemson? And obviously, I'm going to have Mike Norvell on the show a little bit later. I'll ask him about his Florida State team with DJU, how he's coming along. What do you think about Clemson, man? No transfer portal recruits, nothing like that. Is it going to be another year where we see them sort of continue to devolve as a program? Or do you think they'll still be sort of at the top of college football?
Yeah, I mean, my takeaway, I guess I'll spoil tomorrow's story, is to stay away from Clemson in the ACC championship betting market. I mean, they're at plus 350, which is really, you know, that's you might look at that and think, wow, Clemson with Dabo Swinney, you know, they're plus 350. That's a good play for ACC championship. But, you know, I say stay away. And a couple of the reasons are, when you refuse to go into the portal, you leave yourself vulnerable to injuries. And I really think that's the case for Clemson, in particular at quarterback, because behind Cade Klubnik, they have a redshirt freshman, former four-star guy, who's taken 9 career snaps. And, you know, if, heaven forbid, something were to happen to Cade Klubnik, then you're in a really difficult situation there with an unproven quarterback who's got an unproven receiving core. And now we're talking about 7-5 at Clemson. And so you're one snap away when you refuse to go into the portal and get a backup quarterback. You're one snap away from all disaster breaking loose. And so, you know, that's one reason why I think, you know, maybe stay away from Clemson. But there's actually pretty good parity in the ACC. And, yeah, I'll be curious to listen to what Mike Norvell has to say. And, dang, pretty impressive that you can throw your weight around and get
that. Hey, good get. Hey, I did play for him for a few years, so I think that was helpful in getting him.
Yeah, the text message from Gabe Kuhn, former player, probably lands a little differently than just like random radio guy in old USA somewhere.
What? Okay, of Dabo Sweeney's like missteps, I think you sort of talked about it, not going through the portal. But what do you make of like his discussion points when like he's asked about it? His last and his latest greatest hit. He was asked about it, the transfer portal in general, and he said, you know, the reason that we don't go in the transfer portal because most of these guys aren't good enough to play here. That's the end-all, be-all. Well, I remember them being somewhat tied to Keon Coleman before last year, and they didn't get him. Florida State ends up getting him. He's the first pick of the second round of the Buffalo Bills. I don't agree with you, Dabo. I think you're completely wrong. I think you're just throwing out something. I don't even think he believes what he said right there. Some of these guys are more than able to play and hold their weight at Clemson.
Oh, yeah, there's no doubt about it. I mean, I can think of 25 quarterbacks from this past cycle who he could have gone out and got, who have played meaningful FBS reps, who could have easily slotted in as Cade Klubnik's backup or even competed with the job for him, because I mean the guy didn't exactly break the doors down last year under Garrett Riley. So I mean it's Dabo doubling down on his culture and his way, and there I think there's some merit to that, because I think the guys on his roster see that and they love that. They eat it up and they buy it, because you know, from day one, when Dabo recruits you as a high school player, he's selling you something different than what most other coaches around the country are selling you. And that's that, hey, you're going to be a part of this family. This is a special culture. This is a place where we develop and where we never give up on you. And you're always
we're built in the name, image, and likeness of God.
Right. And some people buy that and love that and eat it up. And I think he feels like if he goes to the portal, then he starts to lose his credibility, probably not only within his own roster, but then on the trail. If he sells his soul, then he doesn't feel like he knows who he is anymore. And I don't know if Dabo's shtick is going to work, but I'll tell you what helps him is the expansion of the playoff.
Yep.
Because the playoff is tripling in size this year. And we've seen Clemson on the outside looking in now a couple times with the four-team format. But I still think Clemson, you know, unless there's a bad injury at quarterback, like they're going to be in that 12-team playoff this year, because you can probably get in there as a two-loss ACC team. You might even be able to get in as a three-loss team if you have some good victories on your resume. So I think that's going to help save him and help him sort of salvage some dignity from what's been a less than stellar chapter of his coaching career.
Now, Texas and Oklahoma heading into the SEC, first year there. I think the questions and, you know, the conversations when they accepted the invite and ultimately said they were going to make this move, everybody's saying they're not going to be ready. They're not ready for the SEC, the week in, week out, grueling nature of that schedule. Do you think that by the end of the season we're going to be talking about that a little bit differently with those two programs?
Well, I think Texas is pretty well equipped to withstand what it's going to take to be a playoff team that comes out of the SEC. Oklahoma, we'll see. Oklahoma kind of got a tough schedule this first year in the league. I mean, there's not a whole lot of breaks on there. I mean, they're at Ole Miss, at Missouri. You know, they get Bama. They're at LSU. I mean, it's a tough go of it for Oklahoma year one, where they're trying to build momentum. They got an inexperienced quarterback in Jackson Arnold. So that's, you know, that's going to be tough. They lost Jeff Levy, offense coordinator. So a lot of questions for me on Oklahoma. But I think Texas is pretty well positioned to compete. I mean, don't forget now, this is the same team that went down to Tuscaloosa a year ago and won at Alabama. So, yeah, I mean, I think the Longhorns are ready, and they're going to announce their arrival in a pretty loud way. But, yeah, it might take a year or two or five for Oklahoma to really establish itself in this new league.
Now, Ole Miss, how good do you feel about them? Like getting into the playoff, being able to push for a national championship next year?
Yeah, I feel really good about it. I feel really good about Ole Miss because of the continuity in key positions. Like, I know there is a ton of turnover and portal action on that defense, and I get the concerns with that. But when you really boil it down to the teams that win the national title in college football, the last 10 years, man, I got a story coming on this soon, but the last 10 national champions in college football, have returned of their head coach, offensive coordinator, defensive coordinator, and quarterback. Of those four, the last 10 national champions have returned at least three.
Yeah.
And Ole Miss has got all four of them back. I mean, they got Lane Kiffin, they got Charlie Weiss Jr., they got Pete Golding, and oh yeah, they got Jackson Dart, who's pretty dang good at quarterback too. So yeah, I get it. The revolving door on the defense is a concern, but I mean, we're never going to be talking about Ole Miss under Lane Kiffin as a top 15 defense in the country. That's just not what they're going to be. They don't have the money to do that. Their identity is going to be on the offensive side of the ball. And I think it's okay that maybe their defense isn't going to be knocking your socks off. Like, I think this Ole Miss team is definitely good enough where it matters the most to make that playoff push.
Yeah, but how much of it do you think with that defense? Maybe because they're going to have a lot of talent. They have Walter Nolan coming in. They brought in the kid, the DN from Florida last year, who was a really good edge rusher. So they have talent on that side. How much of it is just like Lane Kiffin's offense and just how much they skew that direction and the pace at which they play? Because I think there's a lot of teams that suffer from that. You play at such a high pace that your defense suffers.
Yeah, there's something to that, without a doubt. I mean, that's why it's the same deal with Josh Heupel in Tennessee.
Right.
You're never going to see them have a top 20 defense. But you just got to get off the field on third downs every now and then. And it's essentially it's an analytics game. It's, all right, we're going to score a touchdown on two-thirds of our possessions. Well, that means all our defense has to do is limit the opponent to a touchdown on half of their possessions, which doesn't necessarily mean you're playing great defense. It just means that you're playing well enough for your offense to get the job done. And then, of course, where that philosophy runs into problems is when you end up faced up with a Georgia that's had, you know, just elite defenses over the last 5 years. And then you can't score against a team like that. You're going three and out, and then you get in a really dangerous cycle where you can get blown out. And that's the drawback to playing the way that Lane Kiffin plays. But I think one thing that's really helped them find some more balance over the last few years is how well they've been able to run the football.
Right.
And, you know, of course, you lose Quinshon Judkins, and that's not ideal. But you know, I still think they're going to be able to run the ball, and that allows you to bleed clock when you need to. It gives you an element of game control that you don't necessarily get if you're chucking the ball around, you know, 45 times a game.
Yeah, and I just think, like, stylistically, looking at college football, the last three national champions, it's not like quarterback play is propelling them, right? It's Georgia, Michigan. It's running the ball, playing really good defense, being a top-five unit on that side of the ball. I wonder, obviously football's cyclical, but I wonder when we transition back to where we were sort of 2017, 2018, where those high-powered passing offenses really shine through, because I think
right.
We'll get back to that point. But right now, it is running the ball, controlling the clock, and playing good defense.
Yeah, I mean, for a second there, when you had Joe Burrow's LSU team, and then you had Devontae Jones winning the Heisman at Alabama.
Or Devontae Smith.
Devontae Smith with Mac Jones at quarterback. Like, it was, you know, that it was, hey, let's throw the ball around 50 times a game, rack up 600 yards and do it that way. But you're spot on. What Georgia and Michigan have done over these last few years is completely change the paradigm, and now you're seeing Ohio State go all in on that for this season with the additions they've made on the defensive side of the ball, going out and landing at Quinshon Judkins and having a convoy at running back. And then, you know, the way they're kind of shaping up at quarterback for this year with maybe playing Will Howard, it's like, all right, they're really not looking for somebody who can throw the ball downfield and be that Heisman candidate as a passer. So the game is back in that run first mode. When does it flip back? I don't know that it's this year, because I look at, you know, the 24 season as Georgia and Ohio State. Like, if the national champion comes from outside of those two, I'd be kind of surprised. And I think there's a lot of other really good teams that are going to have a shot, but those two to me feel pretty far above the pack.
Yes.
In terms of the rosters they put together, and they are in that defense first, run the football type of mold.
Yeah. Now, talking with David Cobb at David W. Cobb from CBS Sports, covering college football and college basketball. This is going to be a running conversation between you and me before we get to season. But I still am just struggling my ass off with Kalen DeBoer at Alabama. I think they'll be good. Right, I think they will be a good team. But I think there's a lot of people that question Jalen Milroe in that system and, you know, doing similar things that Michael Penix did under Kalen DeBoer, whether it's at Indiana or at Washington. But I don't know if I have those same reservations as other folks. And the reason I say that is because Jalen Milroe really has a good deep ball. And we saw Michael Penix feasted off the deep ball last year in that system. And I think, you know, previously when we look at Michael Penix under Kalen DeBoer at Indiana, he used his legs until he had the ACL injury. So, like, I think there's some people that want to count out Alabama year one under Kalen DeBoer, but I think they're going to be a damn good football team that could really surprise some folks.
Well, I'm glad you brought up what Jalen Milroe does with his feet, because that is a massive differentiator in college football, and it sets Jalen Milroe apart from Michael Penix, who, if you remember, in that national title game, I mean, he looked scared. He looked scared any time, you know, a Michigan defender got within, you know, just a foot or two. I mean, right. he was on his heels. He was rushing throws, and you know, give your credit to Michigan's defense for that, but where a quarterback like Jalen Milroe differs in that situation is he can step up, he can run, he can take a hit. Michael Penix had been through so many injury problems throughout his career that you really don't blame the guy for being a little gun-shy, you know, but Jalen Milroe is not gun-shy at all. I mean, he'll lower his shoulder.
Yes.
He'll inflict the pain. And as you mentioned, his deep ball is awfully good as well. So, I mean, it was an ongoing battle with Jalen Milroe and Nick Saban last season to get him to connect on the underneath stuff.
Yes.
And to ratchet back the velocity on some of his throws in the short and intermediate pass game. But you know what? Kalen DeBoer's got such a solid track record of quarterback coaching that I'm really not all that concerned about Jalen Milroe. I mean, I think where the issues might come in for Alabama might be more on the defensive side of the ball, because they did lose some talent on that side of the ball. It's Kane Womack coming in as the defensive coordinator, and he's got a lot of familiarity with Kalen DeBoer, so I'm not necessarily worried about the staff chemistry element of it, but you know, these are two coaches that haven't worked in the SEC before, and now they're, you know, tasked with putting together a elite level defense, and you know, Alabama was never far off the mark defensively, and it's kind of a question to me of how far do they fall, because they aren't going to be as good defensively as they were under Saban.
Now, final thing, I know we started this conversation on Memphis losing out on David Jones, him keeping his name in the NBA draft. Who are the teams that won today? I saw Alex Karabans going back to UConn. Caleb Love for his fifth year now, headed back to Arizona. Who are some of your winners, and who do you think really won the day, carried the day, when it comes to the deadline to stay in the NBA draft or come back?
Yeah, I thought it was interesting. Just a few minutes after Caleb Love announced, Arizona lost a commitment, a high school player, to Arizona State. So
that kind of makes
some dominoes,
sense. Yeah.
Dominoes falling as a result of that. But, man, yeah, I think to me the headline winner is UConn, because without a single starter back, I don't think a three-peat is really within the realm of possibility. But what happens with Caravan returning is you get a veteran anchor of the past two national title teams coming back, who can, you know, sort of provide that continuity, that leadership, the ability to knock down that clutch shot. So that's big. And then Mark Sears, who's announced while we've been on the phone, he's coming back to Alabama. And
yeah,
so
that's huge.
Yeah, that was kind of expected, but you never know, right? David Jones, we kind of thought, might come back. And so you get a guy like Mark Sears, who could also strike while the iron is hot, much like David Jones is apparently doing. And he's saying, no, I'm going to come back and I'm going to play one more year at Alabama. To me, that immediately elevates Alabama to preseason favorite in SEC basketball. Yep. Probably makes them a top five team nationally, because even without him, they were still going to be pretty solid. Now you get a guy like that back, you're talking about the potential preseason national player of the year. So yeah, you got two Final Four teams from this past season that got great news on deadline day.
And we did get some heartbreak with EA College Football 25, didn't we? No cross-platform, no ESPN presentation on the scoreboard, no high school and Road to Glory, no mascots, no mascot games. They missed the ball a little bit here, David. I'm still excited for the game. But
you're the first one
I'm breaking this to you.
It sounds to me like you're disappointed you didn't get invited down to Orlando for that powwow that everybody in the media apparently had with, you know, they
maybe a little bit.
Yeah, they got this like presentation about how great the game is going to be. So they're all still drinking the Kool-Aid, it sounds like. But what I'm excited about is that it sounds like they put in a lot of heart and like authenticity to making sure the traditions and the pageantry line up right. You know,
right.
So, you know, I don't know. You might see Tiger Lane on there. You're going to see the Vols run through the tee. You're going to have the Chucky Mullins head rub, right, coming out for Ole Miss, right? So it's all those little things. It sounds like they've nailed that stuff. So Yeah, that's got me fired up.
Yeah, but we'll see. We'll see. We need to. What console do you have?
Yeah, I'm on the Xbox. So.
Okay, we may need to match up for online dynasty purposes.
So we'll
stay tuned there. We'll stay tuned there.
I'm already committed to one, but I'll carve out some time for another.
Okay, I got you. Well, David, I appreciate it. We'll talk Friday.
All right, man. Sounds good.
You're the man. Appreciate it. That's David Cobb. At David W. Cobb on X from CBS Sports, covering college basketball and college football. Now, we need to go guest to guest, so we're going from David Cobb into our Showboats guest of the week that we have every single Wednesday. This week, we have a specialist. We have a kicker joining right now. That'll be Matt Coughlin. Make sure you stick around.
ESPN. Guests appear on the Smile Center Hotline. Now back to the Gabe Kuhn Show on 92.9 FM ESPN.
Back into the Gabe Kuhn Show on 92.9 FM ESPN, and we have our weekly Showboats guest. This week, we have kicker Matthew Coughlin. I believe I'm saying that right, but he's on X at Matthew Coughlin. Matt, how's it going, man? I hope I'm getting your last name right.
Yeah, that is correct. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Now, you have one more game left in the season.
Why get all your holiday decorations delivered through Instacart? Because maybe you only bought two wreaths, but you have 12 windows. Or maybe your toddler got very eager with the advent calendar. Or maybe the inflatable snowman didn't make it through the snowstorm. Or maybe the twinkle lights aren't twinkling. Whatever the reason, this season, Instacart's here for hosts and their whole holiday haul. Get decorations from the Home Depot, CVS, and more through Instacart and enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Gone quite according to plan necessarily, but how do you feel about how you've played all this year and how you've kicked?
Yeah, you know, the record isn't what we want to be, but I think as a team, you know, we keep going out there and, you know, doing all we can. Just the results haven't been there, but just from myself and from a specialist unit, I think we've done a really good job this year. You know, starting with the big guys up front on field goal, and then I have an amazing long snapper and holder, so they make my job easy.
Right, no doubt about it. Now, I will say this. Going into the season, I know you kicked for the Breakers a year ago, 18 for 19 on field goals, 25 for 25 extra points. You had a long of 57. You had a 57 long this year, did that earlier in the season. I thought, though, that we were going to get the mullet. What happened with the mullet? Why did it get cut off for this season?
It's a long story, but it ran its course. I had it a good 3 years. You know, I loved it. Everyone seemed to enjoy it. And, you know, it had its time. You know, hair grows back, so you never know. But,
right.
it was just kind of time to chop it off.
Oh, well, that's a tough decision to make, right? Do you have a lady or anything?
Oh, yeah, I do have a wife.
She loved it.
She loved it. She didn't want it to be cut off. Frankly, I might have been the only one that wanted it cut off. But, yeah, just maintenance and ease of life. You know, 3 years was a heck of a run.
Well, the maintenance, like, at the barbershop, they just handle it for you. Where'd you end up going to get that all cut how you needed it?
Oh, I'd get it cut every 3 or 4 months. Wasn't too picky, because I just come to touch up the sides and the top and don't touch the back.
Yes, yes. And it got long? Did it get down to cover your name at any point when you're playing for the Breakers?
Yeah, towards the end of the last... last year. I didn't get it touched up during the season, so I think it was getting close to the nameplate back there.
Yeah, I hear you. Now, when it comes to your story, I ask everybody who comes on every single Wednesday, tell me about your story, how you ended up with the Memphis Showboats, and what all went into it.
Yeah, sure. I'll start back to high school, starting kicking, because I was always a soccer player growing up. And just kind of on a whim, my freshman year of high school, I started kicking and decided to play football. And then that led me to Michigan State. Had a great 6 years with that. Did a redshirt year and a COVID year. Loved every second of that. And had a workout with the Bengals and a mini camp with the Bears. And then nothing really led to that. So I was out of football for a year and then was blessed to get the opportunity with the Breakers last year, with Coach DeFilippo. Mm-hmm. That was a great experience, obviously. You know, fulfilled my dream of playing pro ball. Still working on getting to the NFL.
Right.
But then had a great year last year, and then, you know, the leagues merged, and the Breakers weren't on a team. Coach Flip ended up being in Memphis, and he loved all our specialists from last year enough to draft us all back to the Showboats. So I was really, really thankful for that, for him, and, you know, keeping a good group together.
Yep, for sure. Now, take me through what it's like to be a kicker in professional football, because I know that for everybody on the team, it's you have to perform to stay on the team. But you guys definitely have, like, it's a different job. You miss a few kicks, it could be the end of it. Like, how do you manage that pressure game to game and trying to make kicks? And if you miss them, like, how easy is it? How hard is it to just sort of let that go, move on to the next one?
Yeah, it's pretty black and white being a kicker, you know, make or miss. And that's really all you're judged on. But I think one of my strongest abilities is just my mentality of not letting really anything affect me, whether it's a made kick or a missed kick, just trying to stay as level as possible and just trusting in myself and trusting the guys in front of me and my teammates. Like I said, they make my job easy. So, you know, just the mentality of going out there and just trusting in myself, knowing I can do it.
Yep.
And, you know, if I do everything I can, then I don't really have to worry about the results because it'll come.
Yeah, but it's crazy. Like, I you know, good friends. I roomed with Jake Elliott way back in the day, like the at the University of Memphis. It's just like the amount of opportunity so damn limited as compared to everybody else. And I know people say, oh, you just kick. That's all you do. That's your only job, yada, yada, yada. But the opportunities to actually be a professional place kicker, they're just so damn limited. And I got, it's just tough. It's got to be tough.
Yeah, for sure. There's 32 very coveted jobs in the world, you
right.
know, for kickers. And, you know, that's why I'm very thankful for spring leagues like this to, you know, play professional ball and showcase your abilities to hopefully get to the next level.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you know, a lot, some coaches are more understanding than others, but like I've been saying, it's very black and white if you just want to really look at makes and misses. But yeah, it's a tough job, but I love it.
Yeah. Now, 6 years at Michigan State, those, how were those years? I believe by the end you would have played, who was your coach for the first few years and then the last couple?
Yeah, Mark D'Antonio was there my first couple years. Great guy, obviously, and then my last 2 hours with Mel Tucker.
Right, you had a good year there the first year under Mel.
Yeah, it was a great time. I loved every second of it. You know, and very, very thankful for my time there.
Yeah, definitely a tough situation. I'm not going to ask you too much about the Mel Tucker ouster, but how do you feel about that program
you.
Right now? And where he said thank you. You don't want to comment on that. How do you feel about that program headed into the future of the Big Ten with all these schools being added?
Yeah, very exciting times. New coach, new quarterback, just a lot of excitement because, you know, new league basically with all the new teams joining the Big Ten. So It'll be interesting. It'll be tough, but I know the Spartan Dogs will be ready for it and working. Yeah. Working as hard as they can.
Now, take me through. You have one more game left, then you're headed into the offseason. Take me through your offseason and you know, weighing opportunities. I'm sure you have an agent that sort of throws those out to you. What is that going to look like when you get into the offseason? Will you have a chance to go into a training camp with anybody? And what do you think could potentially be on the precipice for you this offseason?
Yeah, absolutely. That's the goal. Either get signed or go to a training camp somewhere. Just ready for any opportunity. I'll probably take maybe a week off right after the season, but then just get right back into it, stay in game shape, because I feel like I'm kicking as well as I ever have, and I'm ready for anything. So just staying ready for anything.
Yeah, I'm now talking with Matt Coughlin. I have one more thing for him. He's the kicker for the Showboats. Anything interesting about you? What do you do in your spare time, free time? What could be potentially after football for you? What do you want to get into after football? Holler at me.
Yeah, I got to talk golf then. I'm a huge golf nut.
Okay, nice.
Love to play, love to watch. So, when this football thing's over, hopefully.
Okay.
You know, set myself up to just relax and play some golf is the ultimate dream. But just enjoying on a Sunday watching the PGA Tour or anything.
Yeah, and we got, I mean, Scotty Scheffler got let off all of his charges
today.
Yeah,
I saw that. That was good. That was good to see.
That was a wild situation, wasn't it? My gosh.
Yes.
Yeah,
crazy that happened.
Showing up at 5 a.m. and get thrown up against your car just trying to get in to go, run through a little bit of practice on the range. That wouldn't be fun. But he said he stretched in his cell, so he got nice and limbered up.
Yeah, that would be interesting happening before a football game. I don't know how I'd handle that.
Do you get to golf during the season, by the way, on your days off or anything like that?
I've gotten out a few times just to kind of relax, get away from it. Just a couple times. Nothing too crazy.
Is golf similar to kicking, by the way, too, where you have to get the wedge out for the shorter kicks, get the driver out for those 50-plus yarders? I mean, can you compare and contrast golfing and kicking?
Yeah, absolutely. Not as much as changing clubs, trying to keep every, like, kick the same swing. But definitely more of the pendulum motion and kind of thinking of the club face as, right, like my foot. So I actually do lean on one or the other. If I'm kicking good and not playing golf good, I'll try and learn from my kicking swing.
Well, let's keep the kicking good, right? Kicking's what's making the money right now. But I appreciate it.
Definitely better than my golf swing. So
I got you. Well, Matthew, I appreciate it, man. Good luck this weekend and good luck heading into the offseason.
I appreciate you. Thanks for having me on. Great talking with you.
Yes, sir. That is Memphis Showboats kicker Matthew Coughlin on X at Matthew Coughlin. Yeah, I don't know what it is about kickers and golf, man. There's all the specialists in kickers, they take a liking to golf. I don't know if you've seen Jake Elliott. He does some stuff.
He's good
professionally, but he's really good. He plays tournaments like the entire offseason.
Are they playing putt putt during practice?
They have time to do it. Colby's in there.
Yeah, I just turned to him and he was kind of looked at me like, I can't say nothing.
Yeah.
Silverfield might be listening.
Yeah, I cannot confirm nor deny. I hear that. But let's go ahead and grab a break on that note. Thanks to Matthew for joining. But let's go ahead and grab this break. When we come back, we'll get to small talk. And in small talk today, I think we're a little bit overdue to talk about Graceland and the potential foreclosure and the fraud. There is a ridiculous story to be told about what has happened with Graceland in the past couple of weeks. So that's next.
Here on 92.9, we talk ball every weekday from 4 till 7 p.m. Except right now, it's time for Big Man Small Talk on 92.9's Gabe Kuhn Show.
And Small Talk is brought to you by Conway Services, reputable service available 7 days a week. Now, Connor, have you tried to follow along with this Graceland story?
So I knew about it. until the new information today. When you started telling me before the show everything that went down, I was in shock. Well, I was like, what the hell happened?
Honestly, if last you had followed it last week with the fraud and everything else and getting dismissed, you figured that maybe there was another story to be told. Today surprised me, but not as much as I originally would have been if I would have learned this a week ago before they dismissed the case. But for those that have not been following along, Graceland has been, there was a foreclosure notice that ultimately got taken to court, and it was under the name Nasani Investments and Private Lending, LLC. Now, the claim stated that the property of Graceland had loaned Nasani Investments, had loaned $3.8 million to Lisa Marie Presley, of course, Elvis's only child. And she, in the process, had offered Graceland the estate as collateral if she was not able to pay that loan back. Now, Nasani claimed that they were coming to get their money back and that they needed their $3.8 million, but in the process, because Graceland was collateral, they were going to end up getting the property. It was going to be foreclosed upon, and they were going to, you know, give it out to the highest bidder, do an auction on it, the whole thing. Now, Riley Keough, who is the eldest daughter of Lisa Marie and an actor as well, she stated that the documents were a fraud, her mother's signature on them was forged, and that the company, Nasani, was a false entity set up to defraud the estate. Now, when she ended up putting this out there in the public eye, people started doing some research on Nasani Investments and Private Lending, LLC, and they couldn't find a damn thing. There's like four separate cities, small cities in the Midwest that they, you know, had to their name, like the properties that were in their name, but there was no website. There was nothing out there for Nasani Investments and Private Lending, LLC. So, of course, the judge in Memphis ends up throwing it out, saying that there is some real deal fraud here that's going on, and Nasani is a complete sham. Now, the update today is that the New York Times was sent an email by a Nigerian scammer saying that they were behind the whole thing. And that that's all they try to do is steal money, and they were taking credit for it. And they're like happy that they were able to, you know, get this into court. And then the Daily Memphian was sent an email by a Ugandan scammer who claimed the exact same thing. So we don't know which scammer actually had, a hold on this thing, or maybe it was both of them. But either way, this is an absolutely insane story that happened right under our noses here in Memphis. And I think it's a different step, too, for these Nigerian and Ugandan scammers to actually get it into court somehow, to be able to forge these documents, to be able to fake these documents, commit that level of fraud and get it into court. That's a different level than I've seen from them in the past.
And we're sure they're not princes, right?
I don't know. Maybe they claim that. I don't know.
Have you ever gotten one of those phone calls
where
they're like, I'm a prince over here and I need you to go get $300 worth of iTunes gift cards to pay your insurance bill? And you're
cryptocurrency,
like, what the hell is happening right now?
Litecoin. I need Litecoin.
Some of the best
Where's
videos.
The Dogecoin?
Some of the best videos on YouTube are people who they'll do a voice modulator and they'll pretend to be an older person that answers the phone call, and they just completely mess with them and hack them back and things like that. But no, this is an insane story. So did she fall for a phishing thing? Is that what happened? Or how did she get involved with these people?
No idea. I don't even know if she did. That's the thing. There's nothing tying her to a Ugandan scammer or a Nigerian scammer.
So how did you get to court?
I have no earthly idea, Connor. I have no idea. And here's the other thing. The Nasani people, they had to send real human beings that claim to be the top dogs at Nasani. They had to send those people into court. So they need to bring those people back in and be like, what the hell happened here? Explain this. And they need to be held accountable.
Craigslist.
I don't know where this happened. I mean, it could have been a bad link that Lisa Marie Presley clicked before death.
You've purchased a Norton security email almost every week that goes straight to spam.
I'm mind blown that this could even make it into court.
Yeah.
Good God. And Nasani, find whoever is responsible for that supposed company, Nasani Investments and Private Lending LLC, and put them in jail or fine them heavily. Do what you need to do, but hold them accountable, because that is insane. This story is wild. And Riley Keough was right the entire time.
Riley Keough's awesome.
Yes.
She's great.
Yes.
Mad Max Fury Road.
Yes. Is she, what else has she been in?
To be honest, off the top of my head, I couldn't tell you. But Mad Max Fury Road. Yeah.
What about Furiosa?
She's not Furiosa. Have you seen Mad Max Fury? Mad Max Fury Road takes place after Furiosa, Gabe.
I don't watch.
Come on,
I have not watched any of the Mad Max.
You've never really?
One of them.
Oh, dude, they're really good.
I've never been really up my alley, gotta say.
You've never watched them. How would you know?
Never. I don't know. It's like, what is the idea? They just, it's a bunch of...
Just some of the best action movies ever.
Bunch of driving and action and, you know, post-apocalyptic stuff.
Yeah. It's awesome.
Okay. So,
Tom Hardy doing weird voices.
All right.
Go watch it.
You think I'll like it?
It's Mad Max Fury Road is legitimately one of the best action movies ever made.
Yeah, but it looks like this is behind Graceland, the estate, and Riley Keough, and all of Elvis's family, which is a good thing.
Yes, that's good.
But that's
nuts. I'm glad they get to keep Graceland. Yes.
And I wonder if they can trace those emails to the Nigerian scammer and the Ugandan scammer and go hold them accountable too.
I doubt it.
I bet, yeah, encrypted.
I don't think it's because of that.
They're not going to get caught.
I think it's more so like, what are we going to do to them? You know, unless you can extradite people from...
I mean, it is fraud.
Yeah. Can you extradite from a different country, though, for internet fraud?
Yeah, this is getting above my pay grade.
Where's Jeff when we need him?
You know what is in my pay grade, though, is conducting good interviews with you know, football coaches, players, everything else, people in the, you know, journalistic people as well. But we're going to bring on Mike Norvell next. How about that? The head coach of Florida State, formerly here at the University of Memphis. He will join right after this break. Make sure you stick around.
Why get all your holiday decorations delivered through Instacart? Because maybe you only bought two wreaths, but you have 12 windows. Or maybe your toddler got very eager with the advent calendar. Or maybe the inflatable snowman didn't make it through the snowstorm. Or maybe the twinkle lights aren't twinkling. Whatever the reason, this season, Instacart's here for hosts and their whole holiday haul. Get decorations from the Home Depot, CVS, and more through Instacart and enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right.
Go watch it.
You think I'll like it?
It's Mad Max Fury Road is legitimately one of the best action movies ever made.
Yeah, but it looks like this is behind Graceland, the estate, and Riley Keough, and all of Elvis's family, which is a good thing.
Yes, that's good.
But that's...
I'm glad they get to keep Graceland, yes.
And I wonder if they can trace those emails to the Nigerian scammer and the Ugandan scammer and go hold them accountable, too.
I doubt it.
I bet, yeah, encrypted.
I don't think it's because of that.
They're not going to get caught.
I think it's more so like, what are we going to do to them? You know, unless you can extradite people from...
I mean, it is fraud.
Yeah. Can you extradite from a different country, though, for internet fraud?
Yeah, this is getting above my pay grade.
Where's Jeff when we need him?
You know what is in my pay grade, though, is conducting good interviews with you know, football coaches, players, everything else, people in the, you know, journalistic people as well. But we're going to bring on Mike Norvell next. How about that? The head coach of Florida State, formerly here at the University of Memphis. He will join right after this break. Make sure you stick around.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.